Okay, so we have to make in English what is in many ways an artificial distinction, but nonetheless there's a real distinction in experience, so we just have to apply vocabulary. That feeling is that capacity from the heart that makes us interested in doing things. If you don't care about something, you won't do it, no matter what you think. You might have all these ideas about how it's a good idea, I really ought to go, it would be good for me, but if you don't have any feeling for it, you won't do it. I mean, how many things are there in your life that you know are a good idea, but you don't want to do them? You have no inner commitment, no desire. So that's why Master says the power is desire plus willpower, but there has to be the desire for it. But desire in and of itself does not become an emotion unless we allow ourselves to become improperly defined and pulled off center by it. And what we do is we create a new separate reality. As long as we know that even my beautiful, young, slim body, my ability to play basketball, my fabulous job, my wonderful relationship, my beautiful long red hair, is all just a manifestation of my true nature. And my true nature is connected to the infinite, is thinking about much longer rhythms than just this life, is seeing the world in terms of what it really is, just sort of coming and going, and then you can really enjoy these things. If you really do play basketball and can, you know, make a life out of it, just do it heart, mind, and soul. And if you can really make a career out of your long red hair, by all means, you know, go for it if that's what you really want to do. I saw this picture of this movie star once. I mean, I don't think she ever became a star. I guess she was an aspiring star. To just, you know, sort of drive the point home, she was dressed in a leopard skin print. But, you know, you just sort of, it was just a photograph, I don't even know her name, I just saw it once and I don't even remember where. But it sort of, like, took my breath away, because you could see in every ounce of this woman, her body, her face, and especially her consciousness and her eyes, she wanted to be a movie star. You know, and you could feel that what she had right in that moment in that body and that face was the result of, you know, lifetimes of determined effort to get to this point. And of course, we have to go through these things. Nobody can tell you it's not going to make you happy. You have to experience it. That's why we incarnate so many times. It's because we won't believe it until we try. Yogananda said that every single thing that you are no longer drawn to do is because you have already tried it and you have discovered that it won't make you eternally happy and therefore you're not interested. I mean, and I don't just mean in a little way, oh, those red shoes, I wanted them, but I don't like them that much. I don't mean like that. I mean like murder, like swindling, like embezzling. Being a movie star, like being a great playwright, being a painter, being a dancer, being a banker, being a lawyer, being a whatever. If you have any understanding that it's not what you want to do, I mean a real understanding, it's because you've done it. Because we have this thought in our mind that takes millions of lifetimes to dislodge, that the only thing that was wrong was not that I was completely confused about the whole game, but that I spent my whole time concentrating on this young, slim body when I really should have concentrated on basketball. we'll work on being a man, 7 feet tall. I mean, thinking of basketball, because, you know, my husband followed the whole thing with the college basketball players. I'm sure some of you all know about it. And there's this one, see, I always look at it from the human interest side. The star player of one of the teams that won is the son of a professional basketball coach, right? I mean, and he is 6'9".
Wow.
Right? So not only was he born to a family where he sleeps and drinks and breathes basketball, but he made himself 6'9". I just want to say, way to go, boy, way to go. If you're going to do it, just do it, right? You can start and get it over with. I mean, now, is this the 100th time that he's done this? Is he still just running the basketball game? I mean, his dad still is. You know, his dad's standing there and he's, you know, basketball. You know, he's not a murderer or a kidnapper, he's not the mafia, he's basketball. Basketball. But, you know, it pleases them, they like him. So they're out there doing it. So he plays basketball. And at a certain point, something's going to click that somehow I wasn't perfectly happy And so maybe it was because I was a coach. Maybe it was because I was a player. I need to be a coach. So I'll be a coach. Maybe it was because I was a coach, not a commentator. So I'll be a commentator. Maybe it was because I was a player, not a ball. So I'll be a ball. But you know, it's almost right. It almost is. It's a quarter inch. These are emotions. These are the strong feelings that yet take us off center instead of taking us into the center. Or anger or fear. And also, see, what happens, though, is if this poor basketball player, God forbid, should be in an automobile accident and maybe hurt one of his hands and can't play anymore, and all of a sudden, the limb is cut. Right? And he goes, he disappears. Because there I was only basketball. He hits the ground, right? Then he becomes an alcoholic because it's gone. It's just gone. And fundamentally, everything. You know, you could have all the success in the world. How many great civilizations are they digging up from, you know, 500 feet underground, flooded, destroyed, covered with sand? And who remembers, right? Because it's gone. So if you have allowed your to become too identified with the expression, specific form and expression, rather than the flow of energy. If in fact this lad, and let's give him the benefit of the doubt, what he really enjoyed was just the dynamic flow of energy and the challenge and the fun and the enthusiasm and the excitement and the discipline, and he loses his capacity to play, he'll just, you know, retreat to center, gather up the energy and figure, what should I do with it now? Then make a new branch. Just like the tree did when it got all its branches cut off, it just kind of gathered its strength and then started making new ones again, right? So, when we're working with an intensity of feeling and desire and enthusiasm, as Swami puts it so simply, nothing great is ever accomplished without enthusiasm. If you think about, sometimes people get the false idea in their mind that to be spiritual is to be dull, or to be uncommitted, or to be uninterested. And so we'll sort of try to be spiritual by, well, do you want to do that? Well, whatever. You know, would you like to work on this? Well, if you want me to. You know, are you going to go up for that trip? Well, maybe. You know, because you think, well, I'm supposed to be centered. But you see, there's one story that was told by Peggy Dietz. Peggy Dietz was a direct disciple. She's passed away now. She was a direct disciple of Yogananda. She never lived at SRM. He never had her be in Nanda. She always lived outside. She was a real character. I mean, she sort of became friends of Ananda in the last 10 years of her life. She wrote children's books and did art. She was just I can only say she was a character. There's no other word for it. She tells the funniest story. She was not a conventionally beautiful woman, just a sort of ordinary, nice-looking woman with great energy, though. And once she said she had her hair cut in a certain way that was not a real flattering haircut, and she said she came up to the car where Rajasi, who was Yogananda's most advanced male disciple, and Yogananda were in the car together. And she came up, and Master said to her, "Peggy, what have you done to your hair?" And he said, "Oh, Rajasi, you bless her. I can't bear to look." It was just loving friendship, you know. Peggy just thought it was hilarious. She didn't have any vanity. She didn't have any illusions. He was just teasing her. You know, the masters are very alive, very enthusiastic. We know something like that can't happen in the context of blessed Jesus, you know. But of course, people laugh. That's how they express their sense of spirit. And joke and make fun. And I remember Swamiji was teasing me once about something just terribly. He's a terrible tease sometimes. I said, and just again, I'm joking back. "Swamiji, you're making fun of me." I said like that. He got very serious, extremely serious. Contemplated for a moment. He said, "No," he said, "I'm not actually making fun. I'm just taking advantage of the fun which is already present." But what I was really going to say about Peggy was sometimes Peggy would drive the car for Master. And the story she told was that they were driving somewhere and there was some construction project going on. Now, bear in mind, Yogananda, this is the reason I hesitate on this story is because it makes him sound different than I know he really was. But he always responded intuitively. And sometimes he would walk up and down, Yogananda would walk up and down the street in the Bowery District of Los Angeles, just blessing the people. And he said no one even crossed his path without it, there being a divine purpose in it. You know, who knows what drunken bum just had an infusion of awakening that then set his life in motion. Edgar Casey, who used to go, he lived in this century, but he's passed away now. He was a famous man. He used to be able to go into trances and he would read people's past lives and he seemed to have a high degree of accuracy. But often he would say to people who would come that the most significant thing that has happened to you and that is still the guiding element of your life is that you were on the street when Jesus walked by. You know, not that you were some great disciple or Mary Magdalene or Matthew or anything like that, but you were just there in the crowd and he went by. And the power of his consciousness activated energy within you, which is still the guiding force in your life. It's just amazing to contemplate. We have no, it's a very different world than you think. It's just such a different world. Remember, I'm going to go farther. Remember that story that Swamiji told? Almost all of you heard this, but still. Anandamayi Ma, the great woman saint, was giving a lecture once and his fly kept buzzing around her head. And they wanted to swat it. She said, no, no, leave it be. Later she said that that fly was an incarnated saint that had wanted to be close to, as a Ma called herself, this body. So he came as a fly so that he could just be close to me. You know, when a fly lives one day and then it's over. But so the saint just, you know, was a fly, not that he hung around. Very strange world. Stringy story. But backing up. So Peggy was driving the car and the master was going by a building site of some kind of building hotel. He said to Peggy, what's going on there? She said, sir, I don't know. Peggy, you don't know what's going on there? All right, then, he said. I guess I'll just have to find out myself, pull in, let me on. He just, you know, went out and investigated the whole thing. Now, I'm sure he did that because he needed, had something else going on there. But he went back and he came back and said, they're building a hotel. They built this fine bar in the front with his name. He described it all to her. You know, he'd taken the trouble to just really know what it was. I know, I remember when Swami Kriyananda, when I first was at Ananda, my own life experience was very narrow, and I never actually traveled outside of this country until I was 35. After I wasn't until I married David, and somehow his travel karma was much bigger than my stay-at-home karma. I've been all over the place since then. But Swamiji used to always talk about all the different qualities of different countries, and he would talk about the shutters on the chalets in Switzerland and what a good idea they were and how we ought to bring that idea in. And he would, you know, talk about the solution that the Italians had to some little life problem that the Americans hadn't quite figured out and how in Israel they would do it this way. And just sort of always sort of looking and seeing. And Master was very much like that. Master invented a great many things and either, as he put it, planted the idea in the minds of others. Or even in certain cases himself. He went to Detroit, and apparently, I don't know how this actually works, but he had the idea that the gear shift should be on the steering column. And he communicated it to someone. It was he, these are his own words, he who thought of putting a cover on the toilet seat. You know, instead of just having the seat be open, he's got the idea of putting a cover on it. It was his ideas to create the products that Loma Linda gradually put out, all the fake meats. You know, like that? That was his inspiration. He, from things he knew in India that they did with gluten and so on, somehow he communicated. Now, I don't know the details of any of this, but these are all stated as facts. Now, I'm not trying to say this to say, oh gosh, Yogananda was so amazing. Which, of course, he was, but that's not the point. The point is that even a great master is interested and has energy and is always innovating and thinking, how can things be done better? You know, it's the progress through the stages of spiritual growth, as I was talking last week, from parasitical, you know, to merchant, where you're willing to trade, to kshatriya, where you're willing to serve. But the characteristic, another characteristic, because I only touched that lightly last week, is that you become more and more, you exercise more and more initiative, and you're more and more creative in the way that you think. A characteristic of the parasitical level is you just do what you're told. So in the past, Swami tells a story about Master looking for these stained glass windows in his old junk store, and Master knew intuitively that they were there, but the employee that he was trying to get to help him just kept saying, "Boss says no, must be no." Yogananda said, "I know they're back here." The boss said, "We don't have them." The employee said, "Boss say no, must be no." And sometimes that's how our minds get, isn't it? Well, you know, they said it was hard, must be too hard. But if we have a strong power within us that really wants to make it happen, that really is determined, but not determined in that kind of flash in the pan way. And a lot of the, what we have to do and able to develop this power of concentration is we ourselves have to discipline our emotions and turn them into strong, calm feeling. How many of you have had the experience, which I know all too well, of being very excited for a short period of time about doing something? You know? And so there's a lot of energy, but it doesn't last because we get way too out, far out on the limb. And we don't like take that energy and strongly concentrate it enough and begin to get joy. And later on in these chapters, Swamiji talks about all the different ways we dissipate it. We work on too many levels at the same time. We work on a daydreaming about how much fun it's going to be when we succeed, instead of working on developing the power and the presence in this moment to do the stuff that's exactly in front of us. The simple power of concentration. Swami gives so many exceedingly simple statements in this. You know, whatever you set your will to, no matter how trivial, always fulfill it. And it makes you much more conscious about what you set your will to. But you know, it just makes it, because if you don't develop that habit of perseverance, we just won't have it. You know, it's one of the most important things we can train our children into. Just keep going. Remember Winston Churchill's famous remark in the middle of the war? Don't ever quit. We will never quit. We will never quit. We will never, 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 never quit. We will never quit. That's all he had to say. Because once they would never quit, that's all that's required. And so in ourselves, we need to cultivate. Sometimes I'm happy about it. Sometimes I'm sad. Feeling is not about liking it or not liking it. Feeling is the strong understanding from the heart that this is just what I have to do. And it really doesn't make any difference then whether you succeed or fail. Because, you know, there's a very interesting question asked in this chapter, which is, well, if life just goes up and down anyway, can't I just sit here and eventually the wave will come around and lift me up? It's a very clever question. It's the kind of question you would sort of sit and try to work out. You know, why do I have to put out effort? But his answer was interesting. Well, you'll get a little teeny weeny bit of that upliftment, but you won't really get the power, the full potential of what's possible. In other words, then you'll just have to ride the wheel all the way around again until it comes around again. You'll just be stuck. And then you have to go through all the downs before that little up comes again. But if we have trained ourselves to be constantly persevering, when Swamiji was building Ananda, and I talked last week some about, you know, just the realization of just how completely solitary and how totally out of his willpower he built it. He really was not building it to succeed. I mean, he was building it, his commitment and his feeling was that he had to try. And that was all that he concentrated on. His commitment was not that he had to succeed at it. Whether he succeeded at it was in God's hands. What he knew, the feeling he had in his heart, was that he had to try. Now, if you really concentrate on that, you see, that gives you a lot more freedom than thinking that I have to make it work. Now, that doesn't mean that you won't make it work, and you certainly have to try to make it successful, because that's what you're trying to do. But our own job is just to keep trying. And it also helps us to concentrate. Because really, if we're concentrating on succeeding, we haven't succeeded. We're divided. What we really have to do is work right now. We really have to do the job that's in front of us, and then the one that comes after, and the one that comes after, and the one that comes after, and the one that comes after. But also what that does is the more you define your determination to succeed in terms of your determination to do the job that's in front of you, the more you stay in the center, because that's all that's ever happening. Right? And if each one of those steps turns into this great, wonderful tree, it's because of your willingness to stay focused right here. And so if we also, whenever we start thinking about succeeding, that can so often bring up the thought on the other side of the mind that we might fail. You know, and then all of a sudden you're succeeding, but what if I don't succeed? And what if I make all this effort and then it doesn't do anything? And all of that is just fluff anyway.